Welcome to Black People Love Paramore, a podcast where I explore the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel seen. Please feel free to rate us and write us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, 5 stars only because we are 5-star bitches, word to Yo Gotti. If you're watching this on YouTube, please like, comment, subscribe, and all of those things. I'm your host, Sequoia, and today, joining me to chat about true crime, we have hosts of the true crime hit podcast, Sisters Who Kill, Mara and Taz. Hey, y'all.
Hi.
Hi, Sequoia. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for coming. This is going to be very fun. I'm so excited about this. When I posted that I was going to be doing a true crime episode, everybody was like, so I'm like, ooh, true crime is really where it's at. I know y'all listeners be excited as hell every week. We're here to talk about true crime today. Do y'all feel like y'all have a concrete definition of what true crime is?
A crime that really happened.
A crime that really happened, period. Very simple as that. Okay, because I feel like I have some contention with the definition that I read, because more or less it was a crime that really happened, including cult stuff and like scams and fraud stuff. And I have a hard time considering cult stuff true crime specifically. I'm like, I don't know why, but I'm like, this doesn't give true. It doesn't.
Is it because you don't feel like a cult is really a crime?
Taz, please.
A cult is like the ultimate. A cult is like the ultimate scam.
It is. And I feel like I have a hard time calling scams a true crime, too. They are crimes, obviously.
Is it because you're a scammer?
You know what I mean? It's because who isn't among us? You know, I'm like, a scam.
You just don't want to be put in that category.
We live in the United States of America. This whole shit is a scam. So is it all a true crime?
I disagree with both of y'all because I just went to, where was I? St. Louis. And I did what you weren't supposed to do. I filled up the gas and I put my debit card into the actual reader, and somebody stole my number, and they bought like $200 worth of things at Sephora. They were buying stuff at Best Buy. And you know what? Even though I got my money back, it was a crime. And if I saw that person, either they was going to jail or I was going to jail. So
absolutely.
Here we go.
Absolutely.
But see,
a snowball of crime.
You have to make it work in your favor. So if they started the scam, it's on you to finish the scam. You get yourself something nice, you report it all.
Not Taz, I'm a fraud on the podcast.
Welcome to Tazzy's real other job.
You're right, on some city girl shit for real. Okay. I found it very interesting upon researching for this episode, of course, that Black and Latino listeners or consumers are most of true crime's audience. And I'm sure y'all know this, but from NBC News, the World of True Crime podcast has a long reputation of being created for white women, by white women, and about white women. But a survey by Pew throws a wrench into that stereotype, suggesting that actually Hispanic and Black individuals make up a larger share of the true crime podcast listeners. Around 43% of regular true crime aficionados are Latino, 36% are Black, compared to 34% who are white, according to a 2022 survey of over 5,000 U.S. adults. That makes total sense to me as somebody who grew up obviously with a Black mom and other Black women, specifically women. I actually don't know that many men that be consuming true crime like that.
No, women eat true crime.
Eat it up, right?
I mean, I grew up, I remember when I was a little tot, like watching or hanging out with my aunt, hanging out with my mom, and she's watching Snapped, or she's watching anything on the ID channel. She's, my mom watched the news every morning, so I always knew what crime was afoot. I'm really country, and we're from like a very country town, so I always knew who was stealing cars over here and who was doing stuff. So I feel like crime is almost, it's an everyday occurrence. And I don't think it's as scandalized in the Black community, because crime is something that, you know, white Americans have constantly said, oh, if you're in a Black community, then crime is going to be rampant. Oh, we're going to make it, we're going to make sure that crime stays up in this community because of all racism. And so it becomes something that we're almost used to hearing. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of times, I don't know, for me, like when I hear about these white true crime cases, I'd be like, white folks are crazy. And a lot of times I'm like, the white true crime stories are wild because Black people got a little bit more sense than white folks. Y'all. And so a lot of times we watch these snaps and we be like, and that's why one of our segments that we came up with, I didn't do it, but if I did, it came from us watching these documentaries and being like, now why the heck did this white woman think that she was going to get away with this because she was white. That's why she thought she was going to get away with
it. The audacity, the caucasity is always so strong. It's shocking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you just blatantly did this thing. You didn't have no real plan, no real nothing. You just did it. Thought she was going to get away with it. Why?
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get here?
Because they have white tears and a white jury.
Like, and a white jury. That's really the bottom line of it. Okay, mm-hmm. Can we go over a couple true crime cases? I'm truly not a true crime girly, as we can tell by the definition of true crime, me not even knowing that certain things were true crime, cults and stuff. So people who listen to this podcast sent in a couple examples of their favorite true crime instances, I guess. That's how I found out that cults were true crime, because people kept sending me cults and I was like, this is not what I'm looking for. Why are y'all sending me cults? But apparently it is, so I'm tripping. Here's the ones they sent in, though. June and Jennifer Gibson. Have y'all heard of that one? Okay, mm-hmm. So this one is the Silent Twins. It's two black girls. Oh, you know the Silent Twins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yes, the two black girls, they were twins. Essentially, they would not speak to anyone except for each other, and they had developed their own language. They started doing small crimes. It wasn't, you know, well, I guess arson is not that small of a crime, but they did arson, petty theft, some scammer shit. And then they got sent to a mental hospital for 11 years. And they wouldn't speak to anybody in that mental hospital. And then after 11 years, they were getting transferred to a less intense mental hospital when one of them decided they were just going to die and give the life to the other one instead. They truly don't know how she died. They said her heart was inflamed, but nothing was like found in her system that would have caused her to die or anything like that. She just died. And I guess the two girls had an agreement that if one of them died, the other one would begin talking and live a normal life after that. And so they did that. The other one is still alive. She does interviews all the time now. She did an interview in 2023 saying that the reason she felt like they were in there for so long is because of their selective muteness. They decided not to speak. Also, they initially decided not to speak because they had speech impediments and their parents couldn't understand them anyways. Whole story was wild to me. I said, oh, am I a true crime girly?
It's such a
I don't know.
It's the scandal of it all.
Right?
And twins are so interesting. Like, Taz is a twin. And didn't y'all have y'all own little thing growing up?
I feel like we're
not the side.
I feel like we were lazy with it. Honestly, me and my sister, we both sucked our fingers. And so you know how they say twins have their own language? We literally just talk to each other without taking our fingers out of our mouth. We'd be like,
and you're like, oh my god.
But we could understand each other. So that was our language, I guess. But we could just like sometimes she would even test me and be like, can you tell what I'm saying?
And can you understand what she's saying?
Most of the time. Yeah. Sometimes I'm like, I missed something.
Yeah, I twins are so interesting to me. And the fact that they're able to like seclude themselves from the rest of the world. I'm an only child, so I am just like in awe of any type of sibling relationship. Mm-hmm. But that case in particular, like the fact that you both know that you can both speak. Yes, they did the petty crimes, but you allowed for both of y'all to sit together in the mental hospital. I feel like that story would have been more interesting if they used their twin telepathy to like break out of the hospital. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. Taz, I could see you and your twin figuring out a way to break out of the hospital and start new lives and something. I don't know. And that case is a case that people want us to cover often, but I'm like, they didn't murder anybody.
Nobody
died. Unless one of them killed the other one, yeah. which is still not confirmed.
You know what I mean? It's very unclear, because when I was researching it, after her sister died, she was like, finally, I'm free. Then the other girl was like, finally, I'm free to blah, blah, blah. What do you mean, finally, I'm free? That gives very much you killed your sister.
Right.
So did you kill your sister? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's wild.
Very strange. Taz, are you and your twin identical?
Nope.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. This is a
tangent. We say we're a waste of a twin.
No. This is a tangent. Apparently, identical twins are like a true anomaly in that it's simply a cell deciding to duplicate itself. That's, I guess, already fertilized. The cell decides to duplicate itself and then it grows into two identical human beings versus fraternal twins, I guess the mom has to have some special ovulatory ability that most women don't have to release two eggs at once. And then both eggs get fertilized, obviously. And then fraternal twins are born.
Well, there's two ways you could be fraternal.
Okay. Ooh, so, yes.
Teach so, the only children.
So an identical twin is a single egg with a single sperm that has divided into two, right? So you can be fraternal in that two eggs got fertilized by a different sperm, or that two sperms fertilize the same egg and then split.
Oh, I've never thought about that as an option.
So that's why identical twins have the same DNA, and fraternal twins, like, you guys,
it's either two different eggs or two different sperms.
So who won, your mama or your daddy?
Right.
The world may never know.
Mm. That's very interesting. But yeah, the silent twins, I guess they were separated at some point. They sent them to separate boarding schools to try to make them talk. And they refused to move. They refused to speak. They refused to eat. They just sat and wouldn't do anything. And so they were like, okay, well, I guess we have to return them to each other. And they did. And that's when they went to the mental hospital.
I feel like identical twins, and that's why me and my sister, we said we was always the twins, because I feel like identical twins have so much space to get away with things. Like if you are really coordinated, because your DNA is identical. So if you can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt who it was, as long as we both stick to our story, we always told each other, like me and my sister, we're exact opposites. Mm-hmm. Like we got the exact same score on our SAT, except for her reading was high and my math was high.
Stop.
It was like, if we could have just switched classes and just gone to, I do all the little math and she does all the social studies and reading, we would have like really taken this world by storm, but we look nothing alike.
Oh, y'all look nothing alike. Okay. Cause there were some twins that went to my high school that literally used to do that during finals. They were identical and they
would never worry.
Wow. Right. They would just study for one final and they would take it twice. And then the other one would study for one and take that twice.
Life could have been so much easier.
I want a twin. I always wanted a damn twin.
Me too.
Yeah. Me too.
I'm going to tell her you said that. I'm about to text her. Yeah.
Okay. Another one people sent in was the O.J. Simpson trial, of course. That one is.
That's a good one.
A classic. Have y'all covered that one? Do y'all cover that type of stuff?
No.
Only women who murder.
Oh, yes. Right. Because there was no Black woman involved in that one at all. Just
right.
Just,
Black women who murder.
But because speaking of
just
y'all,
like most men in sports, they love white women.
Now, I'm not even really going to go on that tangent too hard, but okay, yeah, let's put a pin on that. And yeah, let's circle back to that. We'll come back. What was I going to say about this one? Oh, speaking of
I think
y'all
the son
segment,
did it.
That's of course he did it, but he actually wrote that book. I didn't do it, but if I did, then this is what I would have done.
Mm-hmm.
He has the audacity of a white woman, and that's crazy to me.
Because he's not Black. He's OJ.
Because he's OJ.
Because he's gotten to this point where he feels like he can transcend race. And I just feel like that is such a ignorant place to be as a Black person, especially like you really think that you are in a place where you have transcended race, when at the end of the day, they look at you and they see your Black ass. Like, it does not matter. And it doesn't matter which hue of Blackness you are. They see your Black ass. Like, even Lotto's light skin self, they still see her half Black ass. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And the fact that you think that money can help you transcend race just because, like, football is a big sport and people loved it and he was well known, that doesn't mean that you are above a crime. And he has so much money. Like, you have so much money.
But in a way, did he not get the privileges of a white man in this trial?
Because of the Kardashian.
Because of the Kardashian?
I mean, mm-hmm. Well, I wouldn't even say it's just that. It's the way he was arrested, the way they let that police chase go on for hours on a clear-ass road.
Yeah.
It was everybody involved. They were like, oh, but it's OJ, so let it give him a little room. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That most Black men wouldn't have had.
Mm-hmm. And isn't the context around OJ that it was happening around the same time as the Rodney King stuff was happening? And mm-hmm. so I think Rodney King was convicted And I think Black folks felt like, or at least this is the lore around it, is that, oh, well, you know, you're doing us wrong over here. You need to make it right with this one. Right. This is the get back. And so I think the context around that insulated OJ from a lot of what he would have faced had he not had that context around it. And then also him thinking he's not Black because he's priced out of it or something is nuts. You're a fucking football player. Football players, I feel like that's the Blackest among us. They really see you as this big Black beast. But here you are thinking that because you play this damn game, he's nuts. That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
He's unwell.
Yeah. Football and a lot of sports, an unpopular opinion, but it definitely, how much they put people on a pedestal reminds me of back in slavery when they used to be like, oh, I've got this person that'll fight this person, and now they're going to fight and we're going to bet on it. Like, they treat you like dogs and they're betting on you. And now that they've given you a substantial amount of money, not near as much money as they're making, they make you feel like, oh, you can do, you're fine. We love you. You can get away with stuff. And it's like, no, there's still actions for your consequences because you were born.
Hold on, Mirage chatting, because that's real. That's real as hell. Absolutely. I feel the exact same way. And the fact that they have like white team owners makes me uncomfortable, thoroughly uncomfortable. You own this group of predominantly Black men. I don't like it.
And don't let them start having opinions.
Because now you're getting traded. You're getting sold down the river, more or less. You know, I don't like none of it. It all makes me uncomfortable. But that's neither here nor there. OJ, I don't know. Something's off. Okay, another one that people sent in, Cassie Joe Stoddart, or the Scream Murder. This is also a white woman, and was murdered by her two classmates. She was a junior in high school. She was murdered by her two classmates, two boys, Brian and Tori. They were also juniors at the same high school. I guess they were all friends, and the two boys were inspired by the movie Scream. They loved horror films and they loved the movie Scream, and they wanted to reenact that in real life with a real murder. So they made a list of potential victims that they could kill. They landed on her. They documented all of it on video, like their lead up to it. I don't think they documented the actual murder on video, but they documented their plans and what they wanted to do and all the lead up to it. And they really like terrified her. She was house sitting her aunt's house one night. She had her boyfriend come over, and then she had them two come over because they were her friends. They watched a horror film, and as the two of them left, they left the basement door unlocked so they could easily get back in that same night. They came back in, and her and the boyfriend were still there, and there started being noises, you know, from the basement and all that. The dog was growling at the basement, and they anticipated the girl coming down into the basement. They were going to be able to kill her there, but she never came down. Her boyfriend called his mom and was like, she's really scared. Something weird is going on at her aunt's house. Can I sleep with her tonight? Like, can I stay here tonight? And the mom was like, nope. Mom came and picked the boyfriend up. She was there alone. They turned the lights out in the house, went upstairs, stabbed her over 30 times, 12 of which were lethal. And they did it because they were inspired by Scream. And the Columbine killers. That's what they said as well.
See, and that is where the thin line between true crime and like people come, because at no point should you be glorifying these crimes. And I think that that's a line that we try to walk often. Like, even though we're talking about the crime and we tell the crime in grave detail, people say that we're funny, but we're not a comedy true crime podcast. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, killing somebody is permanent damage. It also happened, this girl very recently, I think she was in South Korea, and she was like, oh, I was just so obsessed with true crime and I wanted to kill somebody just to see what it was like, what it felt like. Like, I don't want to feel what it feels like to kill somebody.
You made that on my heart.
Right? And it's people thinking that, oh, these movies, and I get it. Like, I don't want to be like an old Southern Belt Bible thumper lady, but like, sometimes when you are watching these horrible horror movies and playing these violent video games, people think that that's okay. And I think that there's also a real, I think that's why true crime podcasters or true crime documentaries, they have a duty to say, this is the facts. But here are the long-term effects of everybody's actions. And you don't get that a lot in movies and in horror films because their job is to scare you. Mm-hmm. I think that's why I really like how Jordan Peele's been going about horror, because there's a real story in there. Like, mm-hmm. yes, I'm going to be scared. You're going to jump. There may be somebody dying. It may be, but there's also, he does such a great job of like putting in a real message and having there be an underlining story that makes people walk away and think yeah. versus walking away feeling like, ooh, I could probably do this too.
You are so right. I've never even thought about that. Like, the influence of media on these types of murders or murderers, these types of happenings, that totally makes sense. Because if you're watching like Scream or a slasher movie or whatever, I actually can't even say that I get how you could arrive, because I don't, obviously. And I feel like the desire to murder after watching something like that signals that you are a sociopath or a psychopath. Something's absolutely clinically wrong in a way that an average human being would not experience. You're a monster, I say.
And I mean, like, again, those are white people, but like Black people, we have more things to worry about, like going into the justice system, like being beaten at any time when you are in the county jail, whether you are in the state prison, especially as women. Like, you can think that all that horror stuff is nice, but when you are on your cycle in the state penitentiary and they give you paper towels and tell you to stick it up your cooch because that's all you have for a tampon, that's the reality of it. And I think a lot of people don't see that. And I think that's why we treat Sisters Who Kill almost like a cautionary tale. Like, here is mm-hmm. all the things that can go wrong. Here, and sometimes people do stupid shit. Black folks do stupid shit all the time, but like sometimes it's like, and here are the consequences of those actions. Like, a movie is not real. And mm-hmm. I know quite a few true crime girlies that don't like horror movies. I can't do it. I can't do a horror movie. I think the closest I can do is like some of Jordan Peele's movies. But even then, I'd be like, oh God, you're going to scare me. I'm going to have nightmares.
No, that's actually very interesting. I never thought about the fact that maybe a lot of true crime girlies don't fuck with horror. Like, it's actually an entirely different thing. That makes sense. We're going to go to break real quick. And when we come back, we're going to keep talking about Black true crime and the difference between it and white true crime and et cetera.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Get started on your New Year's resolution with Factor. So you're ready for the new year. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery takes the stress out of meal planning and sets you up for success in the new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals delivered right to your door. With over 35 meals to choose from per week, including options like keto, calorie-smart, vegan, and veggie, and more, plus over 55 weekly add-ons, you'll have a ton of nutritious and flavorful options to kickstart your resolutions. Forget frantic lunch preps and dinner rushes. Factor's two-minute meals are your secret weapon in the new year. Fuel up with fast, restaurant-quality meals, all delivered right to your door. Head to factormeals.com/blacklovemusic50 and use code blacklovemusic50 to get 50% off. That's code blacklovemusic50 at factormeals.com/blacklovemusic50 to get 50% off. And we're back. Y'all, I'm very interested to hear some of the true crime that y'all have explored on your podcast that stuck with you the most, some of the cases that stuck with you the most. Is there any in particular that y'all are like, that one was crazy, that one was crazy, and for what reasons?
Oh, do we want to do crazy because the crime was crazy? Crazy because the justice system is crazy?
Right. Like, there's a little... Which side of the crazy do you want?
Whichever stuck with y'all the most, whichever y'all would like to tell people about, whether it's a cautionary tale because the justice system was wild or the way that something happened, however y'all want to do it.
I think I'll tell you one that stuck out with me because it was crazy. Angel Bumpus. So Angel Bumpus, she was raised by her grandparents. Lived a normal life. She like had like three kids, was in community college. She ran a stop sign or a traffic light, got a traffic ticket and didn't pay it. So then there was a warrant out for her arrest. She gets in, she gets fingerprinted. And of course the fingerprints are read through the system. And they say she was a match for a murder that happened when she was 13 years old.
Oh.
And she was arrested for that murder. She was tried and convicted for that murder. And they didn't really have any evidence. Like, this crime was, she was like at least 22 when it happened. So it's like 10 years ago that they're saying she committed this crime. And they're like, yeah, you did this. The timeline that it would have taken her to get from school to the place where it happened, she wouldn't have been able to get out without being caught. But they were like, oh, but we have this partial fingerprint and it's got to be you. And she was actually convicted for it. And she did an appeal and she ended up getting released. But the way that they can take so little and the way that like the system will set you up. And it's like on one hand, you get it because there are bad people out in this world. And you run their fingerprints, you are going to catch bad people. But to sit there and use this partial print and that be the only piece of like concrete evidence that you have. And her explanation for her fingers being on the fingerprint was her granddad, who she lived with, did work over at this house. And he was saying she used to play with duct tape.
Like 13-year-old.
And like would catch it and stick it on her fingers.
Right.
Like, and he was like, so it's possible that her fingerprints were on. That's all it took to get her convicted. And that case, I was like, she's 13 years old. And then there's like this jail call with her brothers. And it was like, oh, you heard what happened to Angel? And it was like, yeah, 13 years ago, he said, uh-oh. And that's all you hear. And I'm like, well, what's the uh-oh?
Right. Wait, what?
And I'm not here to talk about nobody's family, but I feel like her family was like, ooh, it's either her or us. And a lot of times when cases where you're young, where the case happened when you were young or you were still a minor, they're like, let's just let her take the fall for it because better her.
Because you think the minors aren't going to get as harsh as a sentence. And then
she was supposed to be in there for life.
She was away from her kids.
And so she just got out last year.
She did some years in jail, right?
Or that's prison. Disheartening as fuck. Crazy.
Yeah. One of the cases that, I hate to say that it was my favorite case, but one of the cases that I enjoyed covering was actually one of our earlier cases. This woman named Daphne Wright. So Daphne was deaf and she had a girlfriend. Her girlfriend was also deaf. They lived in a place where there was a big deaf community. And so one day she realized, and she didn't really have a job. She was on disability. So her social security check was always coming in and she was living with her girlfriend. Her girlfriend, they're having, they're fine. And then she realizes that her girlfriend is emailing another girl and she feels like, it feels like you flirting with this white bitch. Her girlfriend's like, no, no, we're not flirting. So then Daphne hits up the white woman and was like, why don't you come meet me at the Pizza Hut? Meets her at the Pizza Hut, and then she hits her in the head, drags her to the basement where she's staying, kills her, right?
Wait. Hold on. The white woman does this or the black woman
Daphne
does this?
They're both, everybody in this story is deaf. So
it's deaf.
So she hits the white woman, then brings the white woman down to her basement, and she's like, all right, I got this dead body. What am I going to do with it? And so then Daphne realizes she ain't got no money because her social security check don't hit until like the... tomorrow, the next day. So she got to wait for her social security check to come. And then she's like, okay,
with this body in her basement. Body in
my basement. Don't know what I'm going to do with it. So then she goes to the hardware store and she's trying to tell the man, I need a chainsaw. And of course, she's trying to sign to the man. The man doesn't understand. Finally, they were able to get her a chainsaw. She's like, no, I don't need this chainsaw. I need the cheapest chainsaw you got. Because, you know, disability, they don't give.
I'm just chopping up a body.
Well, they also disability checks for people are not great. So she's also has to live off of that check. So she takes this very bad chainsaw and starts chopping up the body. Gets rid of the body, throws it in a dumpster and different dumpsters. They ended up finding the body like in the landfill, parts of the body, not even her full body. And then she looks around and she's like, crap, oh, there's blood everywhere. There's blood, there's guts, there's bone everywhere. So instead of washing it, she just takes some blue paint and just starts painting the walls. And she paints the floor.
The walls, the floors.
Everything. So all of a sudden, the entire basement is just blue. And then they finally, when they are able to catch up with her, they look and they're like, you didn't even try to clean this up. I mean, you know, we can still test DNA on the chunks of brain on the wall, even if there's paint on it.
Ew.
So the moral of that story was that she did not have enough money to commit a crime. And yeah, it was really bad. And then we have the other ones that show the injustices in this justice system, heavy air quotes for those that are listening in audio. Like there's really no justice for us. We just covered the case of Virginia Christian, who was the first person executed in the state, first legal execution of a Black woman in the state of Virginia. She was a teenager and she was working for this white woman, and she was like as a washer, as a maid, and she was trying to stop working for the woman because she was so mean to her. But her parents, of course, at that time, they're saying, oh, well, you have to work, you know, you don't, the family needs it, you have to go. And so this woman starts attacking her. She ends up hitting the woman with a pan, and the woman ends up dying. She immediately goes and tells everybody what happens. They put her on trial, and Virginia is shorter. She's heavy set. She's dark skinned. She's got big boobs. And they're like, there's no way that she's 16 years old. Y'all want to try her as a minor? Absolutely not.
Stop.
She has to be 25. And here's another example of, I mean, that happened a while ago. It's an example of them saying like, just because she's a Black girl, she has boobs, she's got booty, that means that she has to be older. It's an example of over-sexualizing Black women, Black girls, which happens so often. Like most of my friends have had an experience of being young and even your mom having to be like, mm-mm, don't do that. And it's not because you're doing anything wrong. It's because you're a Black girl, you got a little booty, and men out here are crazy. Yep. And she was executed for that. And it was self-defense. That woman was attacking her. It was self-defense, but who are they going to take? Whose side are they going to take? A white woman who's dead or your Black ass who they think is older than what you're saying?
Whose life didn't really matter in the first place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wild. Okay, so that brings me to my next question. I feel like Black folks and white folks obviously consume true crime very differently. And I'm wondering if, kind of like what y'all are saying, if Black folks are consuming it kind of from a cautionary tale perspective, or like, here's what I can do to prevent X, Y, and Z from happening to me, or whatever, and if white folks are consuming it differently, what are y'all thoughts?
I would say as a personal consumer of true crime, I don't know if it's necessarily like a cautionary tale. I think what pulls me into it is I have got to know what you were thinking. Like, I want as much details to the story because how did you get there, you know? So for me, I think that's the most interesting part. That's kind of what pulls me in, like, even when I watch like the series about the Unabomber, just like, I want to get as close to in your mind as possible. So that's the part that I like for it. That's why I prefer like a true crime that's going to go deep and tell the whole thing.
I think it's a little bit of both, because I'm also a recreational consumer of true crime. And I think of some cases that are just like, whew, girl, it's great to chit chat about like a Uloma Curry Walker who, how she thought she was going to get the insurance money and she went on the insurance plan. Like, you killed this man for no reason. But also, somebody, I'm a history buff. I love reading and comparing things to from then and now. But I look at cases like Kendrick Johnson, where one little fight with the wrong white boy that whose daddy has great pull in the community can end your life, and nobody will care about about catching the person that killed you. And I think it's scary. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of people that listen to our podcast that say, you know, when it's not the really bad ones, when y'all aren't cussing too much, I listen to the cases with my kids because they need to know that, like, at the end of the day, they're going to, more than 9.75 times out of 10, they're going to take that white kid's story over your story. I mean, I even think about it when I got into a car accident a couple years ago, and I was the one that called the police, and I was the one that made sure that the white woman's okay, even though she was the one that hit me. And the police officer did not even come and ask me what happened. And I'm like, how is this possible? And I think there's a reality of the fact that the police officers and the justice system, they hate us. They don't want to see us succeed. There's a reality that mm-hmm. at the end of the day, people say that they don't see color, but that is a stupid statement, and it doesn't make sense, because if you've got eyes that work, you can see color. And there are prejudices that have come down from years and years before. We just covered a case that happened in 1940, and the judge the whole time was like, I don't even know why we're wasting the court's money on this. This is all your public money. Every time that we're here, we're wasting a dollar a minute. And guess what? That happened. That was a case that happened in 1940. And still today, if you decide that you want to fight for your right for freedom and you want to go to trial, they're going to say, look at you wasting the taxpayers' money. I think that it's important to know the way that you are perceived in this world so that you can teach and hopefully have people be better. And I think that's where I come from with true crime. Like, I see it and I know where it's been. I know how people view us. And so how can I continue? Like, I don't have kids, but I'd be thinking, like, how would I teach my child? How would I teach my son how to walk through this world? And the only time that you really can get it to stick in somebody's head is by example. This is real. Like the Kendrick Johnson case that happened in Georgia, where you've probably heard about this case. They found him in a mat rolled up, saying that he got stuck, mm-hmm. but the blood drippings are underneath the shoes that were below there. So clearly there was blood before the shoes, and nobody cares. And no matter how much the family is screaming and fighting and wanting justice, nobody cares. Do you want, and I don't want to be in the position as a parent, as a cousin, as a family, as a loved one, where I'm fighting for you and I can't because nobody cares. And it's a sad truth.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the Khalif Browder case as well, mm-mm. where he was accused of stealing a backpack.
Yep.
Ended up in Rikers Island. And also in solitary confinement in Rikers Island. We know Rikers is like one of the toughest prisons in the country. Solitary confinement is immoral, unethical as fuck. You can't be a functioning person after being in solitary confinement for more than, I don't know, like a day or something. Yeah. And they had him in there for like years. I think they had him in there for a really long time after it finally came out that he didn't even steal the fucking backpack. Years later, he was so mentally fucked from being in solitary confinement for so long that he killed himself.
Yeah.
That absolutely aligns with what you're saying, Mara. Totally get it.
There was an outcry even last year or the year before because this man was in a jail in Alabama. She was like, I saw my brother a couple of months ago and he was fine. And now I'm looking at him and he is starving. Why is my brother just mm-hmm. skin and bones? Who is taking his food? Why is he not getting medical treatment? That's happening in the 2020s, you know? So the fact that, mm-hmm. And a lot of people are still trying to push it under the rug because the big system called the prison, the money grabbers, which are all white people that are taking bribes and bribing politicians, they care about one thing, and it's a dollar. And if you don't have a dollar to give mm-hmm. them, you do have a body to give them, and they can put it in the justice system.
Ooh, how fucking wild. That, yeah, that was really well put. That is absolutely the truth. We are going to head to a second break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the trending true crime stories that are happening now or recently.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Okay, we're back. I have some trending true crime stories for y'all. Have y'all heard of Gypsy Rose? Y'all know Miss Gypsy Rose. Did y'all watch The Act on Hulu by chance?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Hold on. We all up to speed on Gypsy Rose. Okay. That story was wild as fuck to me. And her press tour now is also wild as fuck.
I'm over her press tour, honestly. Like,
Gypsy Rose, for those of y'all who don't know, I'll just do a brief explainer. Gypsy Rose was a child when all this took place. She lived with just her mom, I believe. And her mom made her think she was sick her whole life. Made her think she was sick in the way that made her think she couldn't walk. Made her think that she had some type of disease that caused X, Y, and Z thing that wasn't actually true. And come to find out, her mom was actually doing a lot of these things, making her sick in these ways to make sure that her daughter always needed her, that she always had control of her daughter and that she always had her daughter. I think the term for that is Munchausen's by proxy. Essentially, push come to shove, Gypsy Rose was tired of being treated like that. She knew she could fucking walk. She decided she had had enough of her damn mom. She ended up killing her. She went to jail for that for a long time. I don't remember exactly how long, but she went to jail for that for a long time. And she just got out either at the very end of last year or the very beginning of this year.
Yes.
So the end of 2023 or 2024. And she's still pretty young. I want to say she's maybe mid-20s now. Yeah. So that's the general story of Gypsy Rose.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all.
So she didn't kill her herself. She had a boyfriend, a long distance boyfriend, and this guy was autistic.
Yes.
He was special needs, but she ran away to this boyfriend and basically was like, in order for us to be together, we have to get rid of my mom. And he was autistic. He very impressionable, and he actually didn't want to do it. And she was like, no, you have to do it. And so he mm-hmm. was the one that actually ended up killing her. And under Gypsy's rule, I guess. And then the reason that they were able to find them is because they posted on Facebook, and Facebook at the time would tell you your location, which most people turn off now. They will still do that, but most people turn that off. And so they accidentally forgot, because they're young and they're probably not great with technology. They kept that on mm-hmm. and arrested them pretty much right there. He is actually going to be in prison for the rest of his days, and she is out.
Oh, this is nuts. Stop. I was just about to ask, so what happened to him? Wow. They put him in prison for life?
Yeah, he's there forever.
Oh, this is sick. Okay, Taz, you said you're over her press tour. What's your thoughts on Gypsy Rose?
I think this is a good example of, like, where I say I like to do true crime, like where you dive deep and like hear the whole story, because, you know, off rip, first thing you hear, she kills her mother, has her boyfriend kills her mother. It's like, oh, they're bad people. And then you hear about the Munchausen by proxy, and it's like, oh, her mom was a bad person. But I think, like, there was a mental instability with each and every one of them. Like, that Munchausen by proxy, that's a mental break to where, there, you know, you have Munchausen and you have Munchausen by proxy, right?
Yes.
So Munchausen is when you do it to yourself, and by proxy is when you do it to somebody else. But if something in her mind where she needed so badly to be needed that she put her daughter into harm's way. And that was in her head. That was how she loved her the hardest. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And so it that dynamic with the mom, everybody was like, oh, well, her mom fucked her up. And it's like, her mom was sick, you know? Her mom needed mental help to help her. And that's why she didn't fuck her up out of just abuse. She fucked her up out of abuse, over right. love. You know what I mean? And then even with Gypsy, like, to have your whole childhood stolen from you. You didn't get to walk. You didn't get to go to school. You didn't get to run and play. You didn't get to do those things. So, of course, that's building up a lot of hatred. And then you have this guy who's easily influenced, just kind of brought in, and now he has to bear the weight of it all. I feel like a lot of times true crime is approach, or even like the justice system is approached too black and white. And it's like, because I don't think you should be in there for life. Like, this was a crazy fucked up circumstance. And at the end of the day, everybody needed help. That's everybody needed help. Mm-hmm. But not giving help. They're giving prison beds. And it doesn't necessarily stop the cycle. It's not a reform. You're not fixing anything. It's all to make everybody feel better about the world that's going on, but no change is actually happening. What's being put in place to make sure that this doesn't happen again? And then, I feel like Gypsy got out because she white. Because this black girl's who done killed their mama because their mama done did some fucked up shit to them and they facing life. So
definitely. Absolutely.
I dare say I'm with the unpopular opinion about Gypsy and the fact that she is milking this in a way that she should not be.
And that's what I feel. And that's why I'm over it. I agree. I'm like, if you do the fact that there's a tour, like, you're doing a lot.
Yeah.
A special, maybe. Get a check, get on your feet. A tour, I've seen too many different interviews, like, and I don't even want to watch them because we saw the movie. We know what happened. Your feelings were hurt. Da, da, like, I get it. I don't need to hear this over and over. Like, the fact that this has become your way of life now is a bit much.
And then she said in an interview that, like, she knows how to manipulate people's feelings because she learned from the best. Her mom was the best. And you telling me that she just got out of prison and all of a sudden she is... Even though she is probably, I hope, please, oh my gosh, please, hopefully she's talking to somebody that is a medical professional. But at the end of the day,
I pray.
The manipulation, the tactics, those are embedded in her. That is something that she is going to have to work through every single day. Who's to say that she's not manipulating this so-called husband, which husband, have you seen? Right. Oh my gosh, have you seen people put pictures of her husband and her mom side by side? They look like the same person.
Mara, stop. You're a fucking
liar. I'm telling you, you can go anywhere. They'll put pictures of her mom and her husband and they look alike. And so I just think that she needs to, like Tazzy said, get her little bag and sit down somewhere and really sit down somewhere and just not bother us. I don't want to hear about it anymore. And I don't think that it's worth us. And this is that part of true crime where I'm like, now you're romanticizing this. And there's this notion that, oh, you can probably get away with this if you have a good enough sad story. When at the end of the day, the story was that like Tazzy said, everybody was mentally ill. So maybe the story should be about mental health. Maybe the story should be about not tricking the system. Maybe the story should be about warning signs so that you can make sure that you're not in the same situation. Not, ooh, she killed her mom. And so now she's going on a press tour. Because I bet you money. We did Jazz and Taz. They're twins that killed their mom. They'll be coming out of prison in the next year or so. If they go on a press tour, I will be highly surprised because I bet nobody is going to be interested enough to know their story because they were two black girls that were also not treated well by their mom and who also had a very difficult home situation, who also were trying to get out of the house and did not want to be there and told the court in the courthouse that they did not want to be there. And they're not going to get nearly as much attention, but because this white girl did it and it just seems like this scandalous thing, now we're paying her? Now we're what? But let a black felon come out. I ain't with her. I'm over it. And the people that are just like, yeah, Gypsy, you should have done it. I don't think that she should have done that either. I would have.
Supposed to come out being remorseful and you just sitting here just trying to figure out how many times you can profit over the same old story. What about, let's start an organization where we stop this from happening, where we can get the hospital records on the same thing, because her mom was getting the medicine to drug her and trick her some type of way because she keeps switching hospitals. Why is it possible? Y'all sitting here trying to crack down on niggas getting Adderall, crack down on bitches doing that.
Oh, come on, Taz. Ooh, yeah. No, this is so true. This is so true. Y'all have very much changed my perspective on the gypsy roasting. It's been a minute since I consumed exactly what happened with the gypsy roasting. I totally forgot that she had somebody else kill her mom. She pushed somebody else to kill her mom. As she's been talking about it on these press tours, she keeps mentioning, like, in passing, she'll be like, oh yeah, no, I did something really bad. Like, I did something really bad. So just make sure you don't do that. And I keep being like, I mean, I understand how you arrive at killing your mom in these circumstances. What I don't quite understand is how you arrive at ruining somebody else's life entirely and go on a press tour while they sit in jail and fucking rot on your behalf.
And she doesn't mention this man. She's just like, oh, you know, I wish him the best.
That's why I fucking forgot about it. Because I've seen the interviews and she has not mentioned him. That's wild.
And you know, when you do these stories, you have to like sell the rights to your story because it's yours. And there's like a payment in the back end before it becomes produced. And because he's a part of her story, is he getting anything from this? The person that actually, that also needed the help, who did not have money for a lawyer to prove, you know, without a reasonable doubt that he was mentally unstable. He wasn't allowed any of that, but you are. I don't like her. I don't like that white girl. And
that's heinous.
Don't like that white girl.
And if we talk about the mental health of it all, I like that you brought it there, Taz. Also, the autism portion of it, I feel like, obviously this boy is, I think he was white. Maybe he was Latino, but I think he was white, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a little bit separate. But I feel like autistic Black boys in particular end up in the prison system simply because they are autistic and therefore people think they're just acting out
or dead
instead of
or killed,
getting the mental health that they need or killed, right, in the prison system or killed because of their autism. And this, again, our system doesn't work for anybody. It really doesn't work for anybody. And particularly those with these types of mental health problems, especially if you are a person of color with these types of mental health problems. Wow, that just really brought so much back to my mind. She's sick. She's so fucking unwell. Not to mention the Taylor Swift of it all. I'm not even going to go there, but that's fine. We'll leave it at that.
All right.
I hope nobody on this podcast is a Swiftie.
Miley Cyrus is.
Dirty John.
Never mind.
Okay.
I was about to say, okay, Miley Cyrus is what y'all say Taylor Swift is, but that's, again,
now,
another,
if we really want to talk about it,
another tangent for another podcast.
I agree. And I agree with that. And I will leave it at that. Did y'all watch Dirty John on Netflix?
I did. Okay. I actually listened to a podcast about Dirty John before the movie came out. And Tazzy, you have listened to this podcast too. It was when we were obsessed with Dr. Death. And then Dirty John was also part of that.
So that was the story of, I think his name was John Meehan. And he was, I think he was a multi-criminal. Like, he had done a whole bunch of stuff even before this point. He met this very rich white blonde lady in somewhere in Orange County, California, maybe Newport Beach. It was in Newport Beach, California. And he worked his way into her life. Essentially, at the end of the day, he wanted her money, tried to kill her daughter. Her daughter killed him because he was trying to kill her. She killed him. And she's still very traumatized by that. I think her name is Tara.
Yeah.
That story was wild as fuck to me.
Well, the craziest part is that he had the illusion of, he was like, oh yeah, I'm a doctor. And he would leave out in scrubs every single day telling this woman that he was making money. But never had money to show for it. Like, it's scammy. It's scammy. And so is it scammy to be like, I have everything I need. Let me just pretend like I am the man of your dreams so that you can spend all your money on me. This is also stuff that happens to white women, because ain't no Black woman finna be like, oh yeah, I see he going to work. He say he a doctor, but I pay for everything. See, Black women wouldn't do that.
It's not happening. No.
And he was so close to being caught. And he had done this to multiple women, basically depleted all of their funds and pretended like he was this wonderful man and then dipped on these women. These women were like, yeah, my life savings is gone. older women were like,
or his drug habit,
because he had a drug habit and he wanted to just give this, he wanted to live this life. And the fact that you're able to scope out, this is what I'm talking about, the lessons learned. Now I know how to not be somebody's target. Okay. Okay. Don't be looking like no weak bitch. Don't be looking vulnerable. If I got money, you can't, you can't, you have to be subtle when you have money. You can't be just out here in all your designer things, because people are going to be like, you know what? She's single. She's probably needing somebody to scratch that itch and she's wearing a Louis. I'm going to get her. Like, I don't need that. I don't need that in my life.
Totally feel that. Is there anything else y'all have learned from hosting a true crime podcast? Like how to not look like a lick, of course, but is there any other lessons that y'all have taken away?
Always ask for your lawyer. Divorce him, don't kill him.
Damn.
I read something either today or yesterday, and it was like the main three reasons for murder is love / lust, money, or pride. And I was like, that pretty much tracks.
Yeah.
With the episode. So, I mean, you know, don't let your pride get the best of you. You don't have to win. Just take a walk. You don't end up winning in the end. So just take a walk. You know, find a better way to make some money.
It reminds me of that new Baby Tate song that just came out. And she has a line in there. She's like, and it's like a remix to the Whisper song. And one of the lines is, I make a cheetah want to kill his mistress. And I'm like,
oh yeah, I saw that. Mara said, that's too close to home now. You don't know what you're saying. Watch your mouth.
And do your research. You really have to do your research on these men. Like, you have to do your, and I just think that with anybody that you're around, like you have to do your research on these people, because even, even as I'm getting older and making new friends, I'm like, who were you for real? Because I know that I am different than the person that I was 10 years ago, but who were you 10 years ago? And do you have the ability to come back and still be the person that, oh, you were on trial for attempted murder? Okay. No, we were, Taz and I were just in court on something totally unrelated. We're fine. We're not going to jail. But when we walked out, this man was sitting next to me, and clearly he was waiting for his time to be in court as well. And he was like, and we're sitting there, we're behind all the district attorneys, and the district attorneys are just being complete assholes. Like one guy is up there, and the judge and the person at the jail was like, you know, he's really helping out with the GED program. And the DA's like making faces like, and it's like, okay, so you talking shit about this black man that is clearly fighting for his life.
Right. What the fuck is going on?
And so then we walk out, we're happy. And the guy, he has not gone up there yet for whatever trial case he has. And he's like, oh yeah, I might as well get your number now. And I was like,
not here at the courthouse.
And then he was like, as well get your number.
Because
now.
He was sitting next to me, and I was also like, look at these white people. They don't care nothing about us. Like, dang, da 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 da. And so he's like, I might as well get your number. And I was like, he was like, well, y'all walked away feeling, y'all walked away y'all case, and it was pretty lucky. So I was thinking maybe that I would get lucky too if I had your number. And I was like,
I told you he needed some of that support.
That day was so minor that we were there for minor things, but I had seen everything from murder to like child molestation. Like there were a lot of different cases that were happening that day. And sir, I did not know why you were there. Were you there for petty shoplifting or were you there for murder? I don't know. And I don't want to find out.
Yeah.
And you asking me for my number. Red flag. I wasn't there for murder, just FYI. Taz wasn't either.
Well, you said minor, so I hope that would not be. Yeah,
I know how to get away with it.
I mean, I'm sure you do after hosting podcasts for a long time. I'm sure you pick up some little stuff. I was also going to ask, are there any commonalities in the cases that y'all have covered? Obviously, there's a black woman involved in all the cases, but yeah, is there? You said money, love / lust, and pride. Is that generally it?
For the most part. Then you have a couple of them that are just like, it was really dealt a bad hand. And like, like you have this one woman, her dad molested her growing up, and then she found out that her dad was about to have or take her nieces on a trip to Africa by himself, and she was like,
oh,
so she ended up chopping off his penis and he ended up some other way, because that's not, she Googled it first and it's not supposed to be dead.
I got you, friend.
Where did she fuck up?
When she put like a dish towel in his mouth. So he actually died of suffocation because her intention was not to kill him. She just didn't, she was taking away what he was, his weapon, which was his penis. Yeah. And so while she was doing that, he had a dish towel in his mouth and he suffocated on the dish towel and that's how he died.
Interesting, because she didn't want him to scream. Is that why the dish towel was in the mouth?
Right. Like to keep him quiet a little bit while she
breathe through his nose? I'm so confused. Okay.
I think like in the fight, he was kind of probably kind of like sucking it down, trying to like scream and stuff. But again, it was just like you got caught up in your circumstance. There's another girl, Sinadad, she was a transfer student from Africa. And she was so lonely. And her roommate, who she got paired with, she was able to like go out, make a bunch of friends. And they started off close, but the girl started making her own friends. She had some family in the States, but didn't really know them like that. Her real family, like her close family, is still back in Africa. She doesn't know anybody. She was lonely to the point where she was sending out random letters in the Yellow Pages. Oh. I just need a friend. I'm reaching out for help. Somebody help me. She went to Yale and she was asking, she went to Yale's mental health services and was like, I need help. They was like, all right, you got one free session a month. So we'll see you next month. And she ended up snapping and killing her roommate who was out making other friends. Like, why don't you love me? Like, what happened to us? So,
yeah,
I think some people just get caught up in like a bad circumstance and it spirals when things probably should have been in place. Like, you know, her dad probably should have been in jail for the abuse that he did for her, and she should have had more resources reach out to her from the mental health facility. It's fucking Yale. I've always had money. You know what I mean?
Yale. Yeah. Like, if you can't get the resources you need from Yale, where can you get it from?
Right.
That just lets you know that nobody's getting it from anywhere. That's the bottom line. That's the issue. Okay, we'll end this on a little bit of a brighter note. Morale, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to say that, you know, I feel like it's a conversation starter for Black families, because a lot of Black families, they want to keep the problems silent. They want to keep them in the house.
Yes.
And when it comes to things like, hey, this person is mentally unstable, they're like, we're just going to pray about it and we're not going to seek a professional. We had a case like Wanda Jean, where her first crime was when she was like 11, 12 years old, stealing food to feed her siblings because her mom was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Then when she was about 13, 14, she got hit by a bus and that messed up like her frontal cortex. That's your decision making. That's your impulse control. So even as a teenager, the school was like, she needs to be under severe supervision. She needs to be talking to a counselor. And if you're poor, and if you're Black, and if you're Christian, all three of those at once, like the likeliness of you going to seek any type of counseling, any type of solution-based anything is not going to happen. Yeah. Even if you're Christian and you're Black and you say, yes, I should do it, you're still poor and you can't pay for it. Like, Taz and I were talking the other day and I was like, you know, I really want to pick back up going to counseling, just, you know, check in on the mental health, but it's expensive. It's expensive even with discount codes and insurance. It's still expensive. And so then this woman, she went on and she had these attachment issues. So every time she fell in love, she was attached to them. She killed her first girlfriend, went to jail, and then they let her out. Still, everybody says she's a little touch. She's got problems with attachment issues, gets out of jail, kills another girlfriend. And at the end of the day, it's like, you kill two people. This is wrong. But when she was a teenager and everybody knew that she had problems with impulse control, problems with anger, problems with attachment, it should have been addressed then so that these two women would still be alive. And I think that that is something that a lot of people don't take into consideration. And that's what I like about true crime, is like, I can sit there and say, oh, and that's why I talk about the cautionary tale. Like, it is about being Black. It's about your mental health. It's about the conversations that you need to have in your family, because a lot of people don't want to have the conversations. If it's something sad and it's not, and it doesn't feel like it's of God, then we're not having the conversation, and they need to happen.
Yes. Yes. That is so real. Absolutely. That the religious angle specifically, I feel like has such a hold on Black folks. Mm-hmm. that it really does prevent a lot of conversations that need to happen and also a lot of help that needs to be dished out for us. That's a great point. Okay, we'll end on a lighter note. I just have one question, and this is a personal question that I just want to know from y'all. It's Firefest. Do y'all remember Firefest?
I did a whole project on Firefest.
Okay, yeah, because that shit was nuts, right?
Let's have this one.
I did a whole project on Firefest.
Perfect.
That is a scam.
Yes.
That is 100% a scam. That was true crime. It was hilarious. It is. I enjoyed every bit of it.
Funny, yeah.
Yeah, I did a report on that for school. Yeah, do you know what it was, Mariah? Did you ever get into it?
I know the outline of it, but I remember when you were doing that project years ago and you told me about it.
It was so good. Like, some guy goes to Ja Rule and it was like, we're going to put on this amazing concert. And Ja Rule's like, yeah, sounds good. This guy doesn't even have any real credentials. And these white people, like, they're talking about buying islands and, like, mm-hmm. we're going to do this whole thing on an island. And just the way they did it, they sensationalized a lot of things and they put a lot of people in a bad situation.
Unsafe.
And so, like, I don't at all feel bad about these white, rich white kids getting scammed out of some money for wanting to do this. But, like, I think, where was it supposed to be? In the Bahamas? Those people were expecting a check. That country lives off of tourism and stuff like that. So to have all of this stuff, like, they put all this stuff in place just for it to be a scam. Nobody's getting paid. The Bahamas took a hit for that.
Cheese and bread.
But all them white kids, cheese and bread.
Cheese and bread.
Like, y'all had FEMA tents.
They have FEMA tents. And, like,
these white people have never known this type of life.
And
they didn't know what to do.
Ugh. It was nuts.
It was a great story.
Is it true crime?
Yes, true crime. Yes, true crime to you.
Yeah, he scammed everybody.
He did.
That's probably, besides America, that's one of the biggest scams I've seen in a long time.
Mm-hmm. And Billy McFarland, that's his name. He was a serial scammer before he did the Firefest shit too.
He had
a fake credit card. He had like a credit card that he had created. Yes. He had like a Soho House type situation.
I got all of this on Prezi somewhere.
Yes. We might need to pull up the Prezi. I don't know. But yeah, no, Billy McFarland's wild. And Ja Rule's big dumbass just hopping on.
Just hopping on board.
Well, Ja Rule's got a lot of other problems too.
Nope. I don't know about Ja Rule's problems, but I don't doubt it. He seems like he would have.
I wanna scam people. But I feel like I'd be like, okay, there it is. And then if I talk too much, I feel like people be like, she talking too much. This stuff is starting not to make sense. And see, I can't keep my mouth closed. I feel like Tazzy, you'd be a good scammer. Oh, you are.
Too late. It's too late.
I do not scam people. I don't care about corporations, but I don't scam people.
That's fair. Yeah. Who gives a fuck about a corporation? That's very fair.
One of these days.
Can y'all let the folks know where they can find you on social media, any projects you have coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find us pretty much anywhere. On Instagram, it's Sisters Who Kill Pod. On Twitter, it's Sisters Who Kill. On TikTok, it's Sisters Who Kill Podcast. We have Facebook. We have a private discussion group. We also have a YouTube channel that I just started where you're just going to get recaps of our stories. And we are having our very first live show. So to celebrate 3 years of Sisters Who Kill, we are having our live show, SistersWhoKillLive.com is where you can get a ticket. We have a story that we are super excited to tell. It is full of twists, turns, and maybe a little scam, but definitely murder. So you guys can check that out March 23rd at the Variety Playhouse, and you can get those tickets at SistersWhoKillLive.com.
Exciting. Yeah, if you're in the Atlanta area, go. And if you're not,
in the neighboring states, you know, grab a friend,
a show.
Hit the road.
They about to sell out, so stop playing, y'all. Get the tickets while you can right now. Per usual, you can find me across social media platforms at BPLPpod. You can email me at blackpeoplelovepairmore@gmail.com with hate mail, love, topics, or anything else you want to tell me. You can support the show and other wonderful Max Fun shows at MaximumFun.org/join. Our editor is Jenrielle Legat. Our producer is Palmira Muniz. And I am your host, Sequoia, and this has been a production of Maximum Fun.